Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub, and this recording is number 6, I believe, today. And in the episode count, that's 225 recording so far, or 3 year into it. And I appreciate you joining me on this journey with the recording of this particular episode. Today, we have a very unusual, out of our orbit kind of a discussion, but it's very important in the best possible way, I would say that. We don't talk about these topics as often as we should. And my guest, Treyanne Bartlett, I know, you know, she's got a lot of acronyms behind her name, a lot of abbreviation behind her name. I'll cite few for those of you out there who are familiar with them. MSW, MCPC, ICF-ACC, and CFSW. And the founder of Mental Wealth Worker. And Treyanne spent years as the expert in clinical social worker crisis interventionist, the person other people call when their system really collapse, and would love to have you on the channel because I've seen a lot of people's systems collapse in various ways, not necessarily technology system crash, human being system crash. And that's exactly what we're going to be addressing today. And then her own system collapse. And I know you went through a series of crises, one of them in particular, it was pretty big, a 10-pound mass in her colon, a permanent ileostomy, I guess, and that's the a word for it, a 5% survival prognosis. You went through all this. And we've had people who had personal trauma on this channel before, and it's amazing what a personal trauma can do. And variety, you know, people have traumas in a variety of ways, and it could be medical, could be an accident, could be some sort of a PTSD because you grew up like me in a civil war, and then you end up where you are right now. So our body, our mind go through life, and life brings a lot of beating to it, take a lot of toll on people, mental, physical demand of life in a variety of way. And as a human being, we're conditioned to go through all this and come out on the other side. Some of us, not all of us, come out of it on the other side in better shape than we were before. I'm not in a better shape in terms of learning in a better shape. Every experience teaches us a few things. So in today's episode, I would love to get to know Treyanne Bartlett, as the audience would love to get to know you a little bit better. And I would love to get to know what you're working on and what is the major initiative that you're embarking on, you embarked on already, and bring them to light. This conversation is very, very important. So before we get started, I want to welcome Treyanne to the conversation. I really appreciate you being with me. And for the audience, thanks so much for joining me on this journey as we record episode 225. Welcome to the channel.
Thank you so much, Robin. It's great to be with you today.
I really appreciate it. Now, the first question that everybody gets on this channel is, what's your story? What is the background and how did you get here? Where are you from? How did you get to where you are? What is the most significant thing that you want to tell the audience about today?
Well, if you're asking me where I'm from and a little bit of background of where I'm from, I'm actually from Northern New Jersey. I grew up in Northern New Jersey, was married in Northern New Jersey. I went to college in Northern New Jersey. I went to graduate school in Northern New Jersey. And, you know, I had a, you know, later on in life, I should say, I came from a lot of trauma growing up as a child. However, later on in life, I really wanted to help people. And I went to school to become a clinical social worker. And I did. I went for my undergrad and then I went to grad school and, you know, got my master's degree in clinical social work and a concentration as well in administration. And, you know, I was working. Life got really good. I married a good guy, you know, all the bells and whistles and everything looked great on the outside. And everything was great until one day. And now here I am, you know, on the clinical side, helping people. I'm working in trauma. You know, I worked at St. Joe's Regional Medical Center, which is in Paterson, New Jersey. Some really tough things. And here I am supporting other people through the worst of the worst of what they're going through. And then one day, I wasn't feeling well. And I said to my husband, something's not right. And he said, what's wrong? And I said, I don't know. And at first we found, actually go back a little, just a teeny bit. At first I was really sick. I was getting my colon ruptured first. And I had a colostomy, and a colostomy is a colostomy bag. It was temporary, right? And then it was reversed. And then after the reversal, here we are. It's like, great. We're going to have the kids. We're going to have the life. And a month before we were supposed to go through our IVF journey, I wasn't feeling well again. And I was going to the best of the best, you know, gastro hospital in the United States, where people from all over the world would come. And I kept on calling them and I'm like, something's not right. And they're like, no, you're fine. Like, you know, go for a walk or drink more water. And finally, my husband said, you know, I need to take you to a local ED. And we didn't think anything of it. And this emergency room physician came in and said, Ms. Bartlett, I am so sorry. You have a 10-pound mass in your colon. Your whole colon has to come out and you will live with a permanent ileostomy bag. I'm so sorry. And it was like, what just happened? You know, here I am treating other people and supporting them through everything. And now it's happening to me.
Good.
And it's very different when it's happening to you, you know, and
the clinician becomes a patient, right?
Exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And, you know, it was sad. I was in my late, you know, I was in my mid 30s at the time. I'm 41 now. And, you know, I woke up in the recovery room 14 hours later, and I couldn't look down. And my husband said to me, you look more beautiful with your bag on here than you did on our wedding day. Now, my husband can't lie. So I believed him, but I was done. I mean, I was done. The recovery was insane. You know, women, not just women, but people, right? Like, but as women, you know, we want to have children and we want to look good. And now all of a sudden I have this, you know, everything's changed. And the pain was incredible. So here I am going through, you know, not only one surgery a year before, but another surgery a year after, in, you know, a midline surgery from the chest down to the groin. And I'm in a lot of pain. And now at this point, I am told you will never work again. You will never work again. And, you know, the doctors put me on obviously I was on pain management and I'm trying to do things. And I'll never forget the day where I spoke to the surgeon and she was like, listen, like you've just gone through too much. I was having absorption issues at this point. I was 88 pounds. I was having trouble eating. It's like, how am I supposed to help people, right? And go back to work. And I did something that I had done for most of my patients, which was apply for permanent disability. Okay. I never thought I'd be in that situation. So here I can't work. I can't do anything. And I sent in the application and, you know, I don't share this a lot, but my husband's a first responder. He's a police officer. He's a teddy bear in a costume. So please, like, I don't want to talk political. I really mean that. And he was a rookie at the time. And I received a letter back from the state a year later, and I have it in my office now. And it said, basically what it said was, your husband at the time, your husband makes $60,000 a year and you have a master's degree. Go back to work.
Wow.
And that was it. That was all I needed.
That's a wake up call, isn't it?
That is a wake up call. Yeah.
That you needed one. You didn't need one. But I mean, yeah. When you receive it in writing from the state, it was supposed to be offer some sort of a help and assistance. But that's out of the door now.
It was gone. And here I am with $150,000 in student loans, a mortgage, and all of
medical
these things.
Bills.
My poor husband. And I don't know what happened, but like, it was God. It was all right. Like you mentioned in the beginning, for me, I know for a fact that I broke down first physically, and I had to recuperate physically.
You're still going through the recovery process. I'm assuming it was not a slow recovery process.
Oh, it was not. No.
It took you a while, right? Treyan, how long did it take you to recover, Treyan?
I want to say the physical part was at least two years, slow and steady. But I said to myself, what if I can? What if they're wrong? You know, what if I'm not going to end up on this pain management for the rest of my life? And what if I can go back to work? What if I can do these things? How am I going to leave Ed like this? Like something happened to me, man.
Defiance kicks in, right, Treyan?
Yeah. Yeah. So something happened. And I was just like, okay, God, like, or, you know, I'm talking about spirituality, but like, what are you trying to tell me? And I started to study, believe it or not. I grabbed the book, The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. And I studied, you know, and I had done statistical analysis, research and policy work as well in graduate school. And I started to learn investing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same exact time, you know, I was able to get off of these certain things. So that physical healing turned into now mental healing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to spiritual freedom, I want to say. And then, you know, years later, you know, so many more things happen, but I wanted to help people beyond the scope of measure and the things that I was learning. And so I became a certified life coach, ICF certified, and then I became a certified master life coach or a certified master professional coach. And I started to realize I'm not the only one going through this. And
there's there's a community out there.
There is, there's many, there are many. Communities. I'm sorry, do you mean of life coaches or of the ICF?
Life coaches or people going through the same thing you're going through.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah. There are ostomy support groups, which are absolutely wonderful because when this happens, I just met someone last night. Actually, I ran into someone who was asking me something and was telling me that her mom has an ostomy. And it's not an uncommon thing, but yes, there's so much support out there, you know. I think like isolation, you know, we go from isolation to solitude once we get connected. Like we need that human connection with other people.
Yeah, we do.
For something, we do. Sure.
And I'm assuming the support network around you helped you?
My God.
Speak to that a little bit, Trayam? I mean, that's very important.
Absolutely. So the support networks, I mean, there were a few support networks that have helped the reconstruction of my life.
And that's what I was going to get at, like the reconstruction phase. You call it systematic reconstruction.
I do. Yeah, I call it systematic reconstruction. So first and foremost, many, many people had helped me recover. I want to say most importantly, my husband and the rest to a couple or anybody for that matter. But in relationships, those relationships can change. The dynamics of the relationship can change. And we came together and it wasn't always easy, but we decided, you know, the power of we is how we operate. And so that's a huge factor. The ostomy community in general, there are many, many support groups out there. Believe it or not, on social media, you will find so many, which is incredible. And then along my journey, I've come to meet quite a few people. One person in particular, or a couple people, I should say, but one being a friend of ours, Bill Elias, who was he's a friend of ours dearly around here. Believe it or not, an older gentleman. I think we all need a guy. I also befriended somebody named JV Vasquez, and he is a blockchain entrepreneur. And I studied next to him and did a mentorship with him for a year, which was absolutely incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible. And so many other people. I mean, I have so much family and so many friends, you know, but the support part of it is the most important part, because when we're sick and we're not well, you're just not feeling good.
You're not. Lights out,
you know, you're just told that you'll never work again. You'll never. And when you overcome those things and are empowered, leaning into that pain was the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah. Now, how are you feeling now?
Great. Yeah.
So you defied the odds?
I would say so. I would say that, right? Like, you know, we talk about pain being the touchstone to spiritual growth or any type of growth. Pain has done so. I had to like make friends with it, you know, after a while. And I would say I'm a pretty tough cookie. That's for darn sure. You know, and I think too, in working with clients now in the work that I do with mental wealth worker, specifically with the niche that I work with, you know, and helping and assisting people. Yeah. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Anybody.
In your opinion, Trayam, which came first, the body, the mind, or the money?
The body came first.
And then you take that trajectory from there.
Yeah. I had to heal first physically. And then I had to straighten out mentally. And then I had to straighten out, right?
Financially.
And then, spiritually.
Of course.
And then financially, sure. Because, right, like we say, you know, if you give whatever, like I'm not saying this correctly, but like if you give the same people, if everybody won the lottery, you know, everyone would end up in the same situation. So the mental capacity to hold, you know, being able to straighten yourself out financially, it's a big responsibility and it takes discipline. That's the one thing I have to say. And being in that situation where I was broke, my poor husband, how are we going to do this? I never want to be in that situation again.
No, absolutely. And you hear a lot of those stories where families go through, I want to say crises, whatever type of crisis it is, and it sends them to the brink. And without, you know, and I don't know how many families are out there right now with no safety nets of any sort. And that safety net that's supposed to protect you during tough times, it seems to be the only thing that is preventing you from total breakdown. Or bring you back to where you're supposed to be at some point. That's what they call it, safety net. Yeah. Now, when let's define a few terms for the audience. When you talk about psychological capital, what do you mean? How is this different from mindset or mental health?
Yeah. So the difference is when I talk about psychological capital or advising people with their psychological capital, I believe that psychological capital is internal wealth, right? Like when I'm talking about wealth and even finance, like look what money has done to people. Seriously, money, like, you know, there's quite a few people who say this, and I've talked about this before with audiences, is look what money has done to people. And money is a tool, right? Like money is the root of all evil, they say. And so when we switch that, there is a difference between wealth, and I'm talking about financial wealth, right? With having responsibility and meaning and purpose and legacy attached to that, as opposed to something else. So what psychological capital is, it's your internal wealth, right? So it's the collection of the actual assets that you can't see on a balance sheet, right? So just like I was mentioning a little bit, that is integrity, discipline, hope, confidence, resilience, perspective, emotional regulation, right? Self-trust. And I feel like, you know, many people focus exclusively on building financial capital while unintentionally depleting psychological capital.
Now, when we talk about the you helping others, and after what you went through, what is the reaction you see from some of your prospects or clients?
Yeah, sure. So I want to say that maybe some of the reactions from some of my prospects. So right now I have two sections of clients, right? I work mostly with CEOs. I focus with NDAs. I work with, you know, people who are having a difficult time, have all the bells and whistles on the outside. But I do want to mention, I do a lot of volunteer work, and I also do a lot of pro bono work, because that's extremely important to me. Yep. So by day, I'm doing that. By night, I'm working with others.
That's what this podcast is all about. It's pro bono work. Not even.
Exactly.
I call it the blood, sweat, and tear.
Yes. You got to give it away to keep it. Is that not true?
It's true.
It's true. You know, like, because it can happen to you. Like, I mean, I'm not saying literally to you, but I never thought this could happen to me. And so, right? Like, I feel good. I can put my head on the pillow at night. But I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
I guess from my perspective is when you start working with people that need your help, after you went what you went through, I mean, that's extreme what you went through. What is the reaction you receive from them? How do they feel as soon as you tell them, hey, here's where I went, here's where I was, and here's where I am right now, and here's how I'm going to help you? They must be feeling, you know, their problem shrinks, their perspective on things changes, I'm assuming.
You know, it's true, I guess, to assume that, right? But what I love to do is I love to give people the floor. And so when they come to me, you know, a lot of the way that I work with people is through direct referrals, right? With working with someone who's worked with someone, you know, it could be a venture capitalist, it could be a CEO, it could be an entrepreneur, whatever. It could be an NFL, you know, a team player. And a lot of times they'll sit down, they're like, their question is like, how did this young lady go through all of this? How did she get through all of this? But I do feel, I do have to tell you, is like the edge in knowing what I have been through, and that they too can recover from what they're going through and be supported in that way with me on a journey together, and in taking care of those aspects that they want to work on in their lives that they need support. I do let them know, you know, like, don't compare apples to oranges. You know, my pain is my pain, right? What's really happening for you is really happening for you. I was speaking to a mentor of mine, Dr. Justin Capote. He's actually a psychiatrist in Montclair, New Jersey. And we were talking about trauma and the comparison of trauma to trauma, right? So what's the difference between, you know, a mom who's supporting her children who's dying of AIDS, right? And who has to come to a hospital and her young kids are there 16, 15 years old, missing school, watching their mom dying, to the teenager that didn't get the car that she wanted and she slit her wrist. What's the difference? There's none. That trauma is her trauma and that trauma is her trauma.
Everybody's in their lane, right? So
yeah.
Everybody's in their lane. In your opinion, is there such thing called expensive psychology habit and psychological habit? And what is that? What is the most expensive psychological habit you see in high-performing operators?
One of the most expensive things that I see in high-performing operators is spending too much money. Spending money for everything to look great on the outside.
Is spending a psychological thing, do you think?
I believe so. Yeah. Money's green, right? Green means go.
Yeah. Yeah. that, I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, I would assume that there are some people who need psychological help for the amount of money they spend, probably. But I thought that was a rare case. I didn't know if it was like, because we live in we all live in the same economy, pretty much. I mean, people go to work, produce amount of money. They need that money to live and, you know, provide for their basic necessities, plus mm-hmm. put some aside. Unless somebody who is making a boatload of money and they probably want to, I don't know, paper their house or something. I have no idea with it.
So even if someone's making a boatload of money, right, and they're now all of a sudden, right, they are now making, I don't know, let's say $1 million a year, and yep. you know, their lifestyle costs $900,000 a year, or even $500,000 a year, and the price of inflation, right? Like with the price of inflation, what's changing? Nothing, because their habits are the same. They're still spending. They're increasing their lifestyle. You know, I met somebody. This would be interesting, I think.
But that could be also the trigger for their downfall too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Comparison. Look what social media, right? I need to have this. I need to do that. I need to, like, it's all smoke and mirrors, you know, consumers consume. And that's the design that we're supposed to be doing, right? So to beat that, it takes a lot of, I want to say, undoing, because after a while, right, that new car isn't going to make you feel much better after something else happens, because lifestyle sure. is going to happen.
I've seen people like who was I talking to one time? I was doing a podcast with somebody. He said a gentleman came in, went to a car dealership, bought the most expensive car they have. 5 minutes after he drives it off the lot, he gets the call. He gets into a car accident, wrecks it. Not even 5 minutes. And I don't know how much money that car was, but you're right. Life happens. It doesn't matter if you have money or you don't. Now, you qualify your work. I mean, I don't know how. I'm just trying to explain to the audience how you qualify your work. So it's not therapy and it's not traditional coaching. What is it then? How do you qualify it to people?
So the way that I qualify it to people is there's two separate aspects that I incorporate into my coaching into my work. One is the certified master professional coaching. The other part is I happen to be a certified financial social worker. I became a certified financial social worker a couple of years ago. And when I became a certified financial social worker, in seeing, right, like how, you know, there's a big sure. problem with people of not having enough or not planning for the future. And so, like, making those simple little adjustments to begin with and advising people, I guess you can call it kind of like consulting on what they're doing, right? I never tell anybody what to do, but if it were me, this is what I would do.
Yeah.
Is a little bit different. Clinical is clinical, right? So I worked in clinical for a very, very long time. And, you know, at this point, I want a little bit more freedom with my work. And so I like to focus more on working one-to-one with people and doing keynotes. That's an inspiring people and helping people.
So you're on the speaking circuit, are you? You have speaking engagements?
I have speaking engagements. Yeah, I do. I have, I've had,
do you enjoy doing that? Do you enjoy telling your story?
I love it. And it's not just my story. It could be, you know, mostly and mainly I've done a couple of private NDA, like events with like investment bankers and things like that. It's fascinating. And, you know, we have a topic you know, they're shocked when they hear, like, there's this young blonde up there talking about things and she's got an ostomy belly. Wait, what? And she's been through all of this. And, you know, so it's quite fascinating, but I really do enjoy it.
I'm interested in the public speaking topic because I'm thinking about starting the public speaking road, if you will, a journey. And that's why I'm asking, like, when did you start? Do you like it? When did you start? How is it going for you from a public speaking perspective?
So from a public speaking perspective, I started, I want to say, about 2 years ago. Okay. And that's part of like the freedom that I love too. And in working with mental wealth worker, as I am mental wealth worker, I actually like it a lot. I like speaking to an audience. I like engaging with people.
Yeah.
And it's, the difference is what I've perceived. I perceive that there's a lot of speakers out there that want people to hear them. Okay. You know, I did this, I did that, I'm this, I'm that, I have this accolade, I have that accolade. They're not thinking about who they're going to help in the audience. And it's more about like who I am, what I've done. I want my name out there. Where
help
I
their
care
own.
Less about that, you know, and I have to say, tribe of people. I have a really dear friend. Her name is Dr. Anna Moss, and she is solid. And the two of us are thick as thieves. And the two of us as investors and just women have really helped inspire each other. And we do, we go to events and things of this nature as well. And, you know, like even like a TED Talk or a TEDx, like my dream is to do a TEDx, not for me. How can I help one person hold on for dear life? And in the face of adversity, when you're told you can't, keep going.
I know. Yeah. That would be the benefit of somebody listening to this conversation. Basically, you're saying, don't tell your story, but how can your story or how can what you got to be talking about help others? Always. And it's not about self-promotion. Nobody cares about that. It's not an infomercial.
No.
It's about...
Right. Same thing with your audience. Like, yeah, what I've gone through is pretty rough, but like, right, there could be someone driving home right now.
100%.
Who's listening to this, who's really like, wow, how am I going to get through tonight? Or how am I going to get through this hour? Or what am I going to do tomorrow? How am I going to feed my kids? Sure. Or how am I going to get gas in my car? Right? Like, I can assure you, I was filing for bankruptcy. I started small. I opened up a book. I got off social media. And if I can do it, you can do it.
What type of investment did you solve there? How did you solve for that?
So what type of investments, as what type of investor am I?
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I'm assuming it's part of your financial health and recovery, right? I'm assuming.
Sure. Yeah. So as a financial educator, there's a couple things, right? So for me, I do love the S&P, of course, but there's strategy, right? Because what happens when people just get money? Like you got money. Great. You made $1 million. Now what? Like you need a strategy. You need a plan. We need to understand these things of how systems work and how cycles work. And so, you know, I love investing as a private investor. I focus mostly in the market and international as well, and in blockchain technology. And what I love to do is, you know, especially with people, like, you know, the second thing that I do you can see it on my website, which is mentalwealthworker.com. I worked with a very big, he's a really dear friend and brother to me and my husband. And he's known as Coach JV Vasquez. And he's a blockchain entrepreneur. And I worked with him for a year in focusing on blockchain technology and how to invest in assets and what that means and how to hold it. And, you know, in taking that, I want to give away as well what I've learned with certified financial social work, especially in school, of how to teach people how, you know, to get that freedom, that prosperity, you know, because when psychological capital, if you will, right, emotional, when we're making decisions or making impulsive decisions or, you know, seeking certainty when nothing exists or abandoning long-term or waiting for a savior, you know, that's not how it works.
I know.
There is no get rich quick, I can assure you, right?
There's no stock tip here.
None of that. Slow and steady wins the race.
Now, you talk a lot about, the main topic is the mental wealth and how does that, you know, I want to say appears in each individual differently, right? So, and you do something called audit. So take me inside of an audit, for instance, when you sit down with a founder or an executive or a group, what are you actually measuring?
Mm-hmm. So what we're actually measuring or what the client is actually measuring, it's giving the client the opportunity to take a look at their internal operating system of what they're currently using, right?
Yeah.
Of their decision-making, of how they are making regular decisions in their everyday life and how that's appearing in their life and how that is or is not working. And a lot of times that data shows us, right, where those changes need to be made. So again, going through, you know, things like emotional exhaustion or making impulsive decisions. How's this affecting my family? Being at work way too long, not being able to hold relationships, things of that nature happen within the actual audit itself. It's work. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm in the wellness business. You know, I'm not interested in keeping people in the same place. If you want to be in the same place in 90 days or 30 days from now, you know, I mean, for me, I'm not saying this in like a painful way. I just feel that, right? Like, and I've listened to, you know, some of your episodes and your journey as well, Robin. And in order, we have to start from somewhere. It's an inside job and taking a look at that inside and giving an honest assessment about what's going on.
We have to be honest with ourselves, and there is no magic formula to anybody. Everybody's custom made solutions, to be honest. We're human. We're not cookie cutters of any by any chance. And each individual needs to make their own decisions as to, I want to be better, I want to do better. And you started the conversation by saying not giving up. You know, if the individual surrenders, the fight is over, it's done. If you don't surrender and you just stand up for yourself internally, not, you know, stand in front of the mirror and say it to yourself, I don't know how you want to do this, but each individual out there was thinking, you know, as Priyan was mentioning earlier, you're listening to this and you're thinking, how do I deal with this? You have to have that internal decision. You got to make this internal decision. And, you know, I work in an industry where there's a lot of transformation going on right now, and there's a lot of challenges going on right now. And many people are faced with, my God, what do I do tomorrow? AI is going to take my job. The world is going to fold over. And I would say to people, I say, stand up on both feet, you know, do some self-reflection. What are you good at? Everybody's trying to find their value. What is my value in this new world? And nobody has been able to put their thumb on it yet. And why is that? It's because we've been so busy. We've been so distracted with so many things. Nobody has really taken the time to sit down and try to figure out what is the value that we bring in into this new world that we're in. And Treyan here, what is talking about is that decision point that you make, that you do internally, you say, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do differently than I did yesterday. If you are going to maintain the same track that you're on, obviously repeating the same thing is insanity because it gives you the same results. If you want to do something different, Treyan and her team or her company can do much better reflection on this. And it's a two-way journey. Like it's not you alone who's going to do this. There's help. There's people that you can talk to, that you can explore these ideas with, who's been there before, done it before, and can actually support you in some of these conversations. The question is for us as individuals, as a human, is that sometimes we're shy about things. We don't say it the way it's supposed to be said because we're afraid of society. We're afraid of family, friends, what they think of us. Oh my God, I'm not supposed to be saying this. Admission is half the problem, half the solution sometimes. Am I correct?
You are so correct. Not only is it is great, you are so correct. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, right? If I always did what I did, I'll always get what I got. I think that in a very vulnerable world right now, as you said, especially both men and women, but I do work with a lot of men. I work with a lot of men. And I do, you know, as I know you know, Robin, I do specialize in NDA and privacy is one of the number one things that I focus on. And if you only knew the amount of people who I sit with and reach out and they're so afraid, like, oh my God, somebody might find, that's not me, number one. Number two, you'd be shocked. I guess maybe people would be shocked at the amount of, especially now more than ever, people are reaching out for help. The biggest CEOs in the world, right? Like the biggest professionals, you know, you never know what people are going through. And, yeah. You know, just to say something as well, you mentioned something about AI. And I hear the fear. I hear the fear on both sides. I hear the uncertainty. And I also hear the reality, right? Because we see what's going on in the world and with jobs and et cetera, et cetera. And I have to tell you something. Two things. Number one, somebody reached out to me about an AI therapist and coach. And I said, let me know how that works out for you. I think that's fair. I think that it is, I think it that aspect of it is really, you know, like I said, isolation, the opposite of isolation is connection and solitude, and we genuinely need that. So I love working with humans. I also believe that this is the era of authenticity.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
There's no doubt.
100%. Look, the one thing that is, it's good currency right now, I think, is human authenticity. Like, I tell you how, to what level, like when I write something and I want to make sure that somebody gets it, I inject grammatical error in my work.
Perfect.
Because then I'm assuming somebody's going to say, well, this is not what's written by AI or some bot wrote it or whatever the case may be. The authentic conversation, we're made as a human to have mistakes, to make mistakes. And if somebody out there from my listeners is going to say they're perfect, well, I would love to meet you and I would love to host you on this podcast. Show me you're perfect.
No, but yeah, you know, like, listen, I'm telling you right now, like life will occasionally challenge your plans. You
yes.
know, will challenge your expectations. AI is coming out, right? Like this is, it's overwhelming and it's,
correct.
You know, people are generally and genuinely worried. I look at it and I'm like, let me take a look at this. What is it that I can do? And there's a lot of ways that we can overcome that. But I'm here to tell you, you know, it is the era of authenticity. It is so important. True human connection, being real, not being fake and fun. There's so much of that in this world.
Oh my God. Yes.
Like, you know, like, I mean, we've survived so many.
I don't know what's real anymore. I see content online. I have no idea what is real and what's not real.
Yeah. Most of it is AI, unfortunately. And that's right. It's not helpful. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Damn sure. A client was sharing with me the other day, and something that they're dealing with their children, which is, you know, they wish they never gave iPads to their kids and screens, because that taking that away from them is causing nothing but anxiety and fear and overwhelmingness. And it's really, it's not helping, right? So we're working on solutions to that, but sure. Like, please don't be afraid to reach out for support. Any and everybody, you know, it doesn't mean it can be me, it could be somebody, but like the power of we, right? Like, don't have to go through anything alone. Of myself, I am nothing.
Also, you talk about something called return on shared intelligence and cognitive capital. For those who are out there, Treyanne, listening to this, what does that mean exactly? Can you break it down for them?
Sure. So a return on shared intelligence, the way that I think about this, is exactly what we're doing. We see so much competition. We see so many people wanting to do things on their own. We see so much ego in this world. Or we also see, like, oh, if everything looks great on the outside, they must be doing so good. And that's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily accurate. Shared intelligence is working together in collaboration, right?
Yep.
How do we get good at something, right? How do we master something? We all need a Yoda in our life, right? Or we all need some type of direction. It doesn't necessarily need to be the term God or anything of that nature, right? I'm not talking about that, but some kind of purpose and meaning and guide that we, you know, can turn to and be vulnerable with and be real and really help us to get to the next spot. And that return in kind, will help you help others beyond belief, right? I've met some of the most successful people, Robin, successful people in their careers, and they're really providing a lot of change and collaboration for others, but they never see their families. They don't go to their kids' games. They don't, like, you know, and that is that's really, really tough. So when someone like that comes to me and we take a look at their audit and we go, okay, thank you for your honesty. Let's take a look at this and see what we can do, where we can change and make these simple little adjustments together. And I take no credit for anything. I'm an educator, right? And so, you know, it's the same thing, right? Like with herd mentality, you know how they say, like, you are the sum of the five people you hang out with, right? Like,
negativity. Yeah, the friends you keep.
Sure, like the company you keep, you are what you eat, right?
Yeah.
So having a person in your life to guide you, and that's what I do with my clients or with my audience when I'm speaking at an engagement or conducting, you know, a retreat or something of that nature, is how do we collaborate? And not only how do we collaborate, but how is it that if with you collaborating with others, how can we create a plan in doing that so that you get that return and your life gets better?
That's right. And people around you see you in a different light too, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is the, I know, like, most people, like, they have an external image on, we call it like the external success image, right? So, you know, everybody loves to flash, you know, even if you don't have to go far, you just flip LinkedIn. Every post is about celebrating something. And I'm tired of LinkedIn celebrating crap. I'm sorry to say the word. I mean, I've got so many connections. I know these people and I know it's not all rosy. And I know there are some onion somewhere in that rose garden, which nobody talks about. So there's what I call the external success versus the internal capacity that nobody talks about. Is there a way for you to pinpoint that, to put your finger on this?
I don't know if it's necessarily a way that I can put a finger on something.
Unless somebody comes into you and say, here's what I'm thinking.
Yes. However, I want to give you an example of something with this LinkedIn and I'm not knocking LinkedIn. Okay. I just want to put that out there. I'm not knocking LinkedIn. It's great for, you know, connecting with each other, but there's a lot of stuff out there where the real value is being washed away, right?
Okay.
Like the real value, like, you know, of a message or of something that someone accomplished or went through is being overturned, right? Like, or we're missing that, or we're not highlighting those things. And so when people, you know, what I see, I want to give you an example. I had a meeting with somebody last year, and they wanted to collaborate with me. So I met them. At a restaurant, and they showed up in a beautiful Porsche. I mean, this was beautiful. Okay. Like, this car was fantastic. I showed up in my 2012 Mazda at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And in this person wanting to collaborate with me, I found out a lot of truths that they shared with me, and their company was collapsing. They had no money. They had no money.
What about the Porsche?
I know. It was more important for them to show up. To give the image, because I'm like, I smell a fish. Something's not right here. And I don't need to be right, by the way. And yeah, we got down to the causes and conditions. So every single time this person would get paid a very, very large amount, they would do the same exact thing. They would spend it and nothing changed. And their happiness didn't change. And their relationships didn't change. And they're still not changed. You know, obviously I decided not to collaborate with that person because I'm very careful of what I do and what I don't do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that the image on the outside for some people, or for a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? When people are talking about the M word, I think it's a bad word, money. When people are talking out loud about the term like money,
mm-hmm.
when people are talking about what they do have or what they don't have.
They're flashing it into conversation, you mean, Treyan?
Yeah, of course. That's not real value.
No.
Right? Like, you and I, and a lot of your audience members understand, right, what true value is.
Oh, for sure.
Both internally and, right, externally. We understand, right, the value of actual tangible assets as well and the difference between the two. But, you know, as far as people are concerned, I'm like, for me, like, I'm just Eddie's wife. Like, I don't think people know. You know, like that I'm like, you know, that I learned from like the best of the best, and that I genuinely like, because a lot of people don't care too. You know, when people are in my, are working with me, I actually care, and I'm not judging them. I want them to get down to the causes and conditions of sure. what is happening for them and what they are truly valuing, and focus right on the next steps of building that psychological capital during very, very difficult seasons. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty going on in this world right now, and being able to ask ourselves, like, what do I actually know? What am I assuming in my life? Like, right? Like the four agreements, assume nothing, right? What story am I creating and protecting, you know, your own true value? There is nothing wrong with reaching out. And then as far as like, you know, LinkedIn, and it's all, I don't believe a lot of it is collaboration. I believe it, a lot of it is competition. And I don't know if a lot of people would have been able to sustain what I sustained. And I'm not saying that in an egotistical way. I'm literally saying, I think it would have broken a lot of
people. Oh, 100%. I mean, not everybody's built for the challenges that may life may face them down the road, but in the, you know, there's a lot of things to unpack here. We could talk about that for a while. But one of the things is that I, you know, what you just mentioned and some of the examples you've given is sort of an exhibit of when life doesn't go according to plan. You have planned something, you went and leased that expensive car, you bought that expensive house, you whatever you've done in your life to accommodate, oh, I've got a title now, I've got a position of some sort, whatever the case may be. But it doesn't go according to plan for whatever reason, financial. And what is the first thing that high performers should protect? And what is the first thing they actually usually try to protect instead? You know, what they're really should protect versus what they actually protect.
Sure.
Have you seen that?
I sure have. What they should really protect is their decision-making skills. What they should really protect is their instant decision-making skills. Because a lot of times too, I want to tell you that high performers have very good acute decision-making skills in the job, but then in real life, they're not so great when something happens. So that's the first thing, right? That they need to protect, or that they really should protect. And a lot of times when in doubt, do nothing is actually the answer to when, you know, something does come up and where it requires an action, right? It doesn't necessarily, but right, that decision-making and protecting our psychological actual capital during, right? Because psychological capital grows when we learn to move forward before we have certainty in our lives and before uncertainty actually arrives. So protecting that psychological capital, that decision-making, that anxiety, that overthinking, the emotional exhaustion of what something happens to us is super duper important. What is it that they usually protect first? Their privacy.
Oh, really? They just don't want to be ashamed of it.
Their privacy. Yeah, of course. And that's right, like across all boards.
That's normal, isn't it?
Very. Yeah. Privacy is...
You probably have to sign a lot of NDAs before you get into a conversation like this.
Very much. Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. And listen, I value privacy. I value privacy too, right? And so protecting that privacy is because, right, like that's the difference between, like, right, we talk about creating, I talk about mental wealth worker, right? Like we talk about, like, oh, I want you to see this. I want you to know I have that. I want you to know I know this person. I want you, right? I need all the bells and whistles. Wealthy people, like actual wealthy people, not in just finance, but in mind, they're not thinking about those things.
I think this is a problem, what we call nouveau riche, you know, the people that just came about of money recently. In fact, there are many examples where rich people don't behave like this. Like, no. Genuinely rich people don't behave like that.
No.
There's many examples where, you know, multi-billionaires are driving like old beat up cars versus the nouveau riche going and blowing their entire salary on a mortgage on a car or loan on a car loan. It just sounds stupid to me. I'm like you, I drive like a 16-year-old Honda Accord. And I keep patching it up.
I don't know.
I don't want to give my money to the automotive companies for some reason.
Listen, it's a car, right? So is a car, unless it's a classic car, of historic value, and this is for anybody, but like, is a car an asset or a liability?
Well, I mean, everybody would agree that it is the worst investment you can do is buy a car.
Right.
It's not an investment, that's for sure. It's a huge liability.
Yeah, it goes down in value. You can hurt somebody with it. Somebody can hurt you with it. It's not, right? It's not tangible. It goes down in value as a matter of fact.
Is it a status symbol? Maybe.
I guess so.
People would see it as a status symbol.
Yeah. I think
it looks good on Instagram, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. It's a car. It gets you from A to B. I want to share something with you, though, about, you know, in uncertain times, you know, or protecting of how high performers actually work. And the reason why I want to answer this question to you is because I brought my husband and I, we went for a walk the other day and we ran into a man, not ran into him, but there was a man walking around, walking his dog, and he has this accent. So he's talking to us with his dog. His dog's talking to my dog, you know, interacting together. And you can tell this guy's done pretty well. He's serene. He's relaxed. He's telling me about his dog Toto and introduces himself to me. And he tells me about how he lost his wife 2 years ago and how Toto saved his life. Okay. And him and Toto go sailing all around the world. So he's, you know, where Toto is allowed to go to. So somehow, and it's this little
poodle.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's able to get into Turkey with Toto and a couple other places. They just came back from Portugal and it was a beautiful story. And I said, where are you from? And, you know, I sure didn't guess it. And he told me he's from Russia. And he says, we have a saying in my country. We were talking about business for a couple minutes. And he goes, we have a saying in my country. There's no pocket in a coffin. I was like, wow, I love that. Because after his wife died, nothing else mattered. Nothing else mattered,
yeah.
You know? So right, like I was thinking about him in uncertain times, like how do you protect your cognitive and psychological capital, right? You keep going, you connect. It was so simple. It wasn't that complicated.
Yeah.
But absolutely. That is like that's where like that decision-making capacity is so important to protect. It is so important to protect and hone it because you know, life is going to be life. Just like the markets are cycles, life functions in cycles, right?
Correct.
And so
social phases.
Everything that goes up must come down. I mean, like, but now life for me is more like lasagna. And that's that's where I help people the most is like, okay, so in the lasagna, how do we get through those things? If something. And because when the storm passes, it's the psychological capital that determines how quickly you rebuild from what just happened as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's the inner strength, they call it, or whatever mm-hmm. you're into as a listener, that inner energy that drives you to the next phase. Now, you define the outcome of your work as precision, stability, and infinite fulfillment. And you just reminded me of the infinite fulfillment based on the quote that you got from that gentleman that you were talking to, your husband, the gentleman with the little dog. Is there that state of infinite fulfillment? How difficult for somebody to get to that state?
Here's the secret. The secret is it's not that difficult. It's what we're holding that needs to change, right? So a lot of times I'll say to somebody, right? Like they come in with a lot of, you know, chaos, and that's okay, right? And I'll say to them, okay, if I open my drawer up and I handed you peace, would you know what to do with it?
Yeah.
And they would for maybe like 5-10 minutes. And then, right, like they would be wired to go back into, you know, the old previous relationship or go into that old behavior or get back into that bad deal or
old habits die hard
very quickly. Yeah. So it's very much like, right, like if you want that freedom, if you want that prosperity, you have to do things different. And you have to, like we talked about it before, you have to want to change, right? Mm-hmm. I see people who are like, you know, you mentioned with mindset and things like that. And yeah, it is about a mindset, but it's like, yeah, okay, let's create this vision board and just all this stuff will just appear. That's not how it works. We have to cooperate. We have to take action, right? Yeah. And when we take action, those results will show up in our lives. You know, a person can have millions of dollars in assets and be emotionally bankrupt.
I mean, that happens all the time. I mean,
all the time.
Look at the brat rich kids, right? So their parents are like billionaires and they live on what they call estate money, and they're not happy. And most of them are completely unhappy.
Right. Very much so. Because they don't have, right? Or like they lack purpose, meaning, accountability, discipline, faith. What is legacy? Like, what is it that you want to be remembered for? What is,
you know, this is something we didn't talk about, the legacy. What are you leaving behind? I mean, rich is fine, but what are you leaving behind? What do you want to be remembered by after we all, because we're all here on a limited, you know, limited time. And as far as we know, you only get one life. And so what are you going to be remembered by? If somebody remembers your name 10, 15 years after you're gone, what is it that you want them to remember you by? It's very important. Because, I mean, I'm a believer. I'm not sure if everybody's listening here is a believer or not. I have no idea. But whatever you believe in, you're not a speck of dust and you're gone. There's something that has to stay after you're gone. What is that? Money? I don't think so. As soon as you're gone, the government's going to take half of it probably. And, if you owe some money, people are going to be selling your house or whatever they're going to do to settle that debt. I would say is that good deeds that you leave around that people are going to remember you about. Those are much more lasting than your bank account. 100%. I think so. I mean, I don't know for sure how people feel about this, but I do believe like this is where you leave an impact in the world. People talk about impact. What are you leaving? What's your impact on the people around you? This is your world. We all live in a small bubble of our own world. We hope to impact larger population or larger number of people. And there's various mediums you can do that. You can use social media. You can proclaim your opinion in any way you want to. And hopefully that resonates with somebody. Hopefully you teach somebody something that changes their life to positive.
Right, right. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's the thing, right? Was I a good human? Was I a good human? Are the simple things. Was I a kind wife? Did I help? Did I do something? Or did I just sit there and do nothing? You know, what is the purpose of all of this? How can I touch someone else's life? How can I support someone else? I cannot explain to you, Robin, or your audience, or express. It was something that happened to me. You know, I'm not saying that, right? Like, I'm not saying that I'm happy that this happened, but my suffering had meaning, even though I didn't know what it meant. I had no idea what it meant. It was painful. And the pain that I was dealing with was beyond physical. It was beyond physical, right? And there was no amount of money in the world that could heal the God size or, you know, the emotional hole within me. And, you know, again, I was empowered. I was empowered. And that's why I love to empower people, invite people to really take a look at what's actually going on. Like, what's real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually real. Like, you know, in 1,000 years from now, is this really going to matter? Right. But in 1,000 years from now, if it does matter, what was my contribution?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And being able to admit our faults too, is a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a very slight shift. Yeah. Yeah, you know.
This is a very interesting conversation, Tria. I really enjoyed it. What do you think? Did you like it?
I loved it. I really did. I loved it. I loved, you know, I love, you know, being with you and working with you. And I, one of the couple of things that I want to leave with you is that, right, like, you know, uncertainty is expensive. There's no doubt. Uncertainty is expensive because it's not because of what happens, but because of, right, what we do while trying to avoid it. Sure. And, you know, so trying to control everything and living in future scenarios, it's not gonna help us, right? But let's return to building that psychological capital during really difficult things. And some of the ways that we can do that is, right, like protecting our energy, right? Not every conversation deserves access. Not every opinion deserves any consideration whatsoever. Not every battle deserves participation. Fighting. Yeah, no. And focus on the next right steps, right? Not Sorry. Like the next 100, but what am I doing right now? Just, you know, the one thing that I too want to share is, right, like psychological capital actually grows when we learn to move forward before we have the certainty. That's like blind faith alone. So, you know, right, like, you know, life will occasionally challenge things, but what would change in your life? I do have one question to leave you and your audience with, which would be, you know, what would change in your life if you invested in your own psychological capital with the same discipline that you invest in your financial capital, right? The same.
Very important question. Important question. What would change in your life if you invest in your psychological capital as you invest in any other capital, physical assets, etc.? So sure, very important question from Trianne. Now, I want to thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this journey today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And if anybody needs me, my website is mentalwealthworker.com. Yep.
And we'll share your contact information on behalf of myself and the audience. I want to thank you for joining me, Trianne Bartlett, today. I really appreciate it. It was one of those conversations that I will be thinking about for a while. It sits with me. I'm not dissociated from my guests, that's for sure. I feel with them. It's almost second nature to me to feel that way. I know my parents and my family and my wife tells me, like, if she got a headache, I get a headache. I feel the headache. Yeah. I don't know what to call it. Like, here they call it sympathy pain, but I don't know what it is. I just feel like I'm connected with others that way. But for anyone who's listening who wants to learn more about Trianne and her work, please visit mentalwealthworkers.com, worker.com without an S. And if you want to connect with Trianne on LinkedIn and you can't find her, reach out to me and I will be happy to do an introduction. No problem there. Everything will be posted on the Localization Fireside Chat channels, the YouTube channel and the audio channel and the blog post as well, where I summarize the conversation in a short text where people can review and archive them. We've got about, I don't know, 300 blogs already on the blog post. If somebody wants to revisit some of the old conversations and try to figure out what's going on, feel free to do that as well. Hopefully this episode have resonated with many of our audience. And if you feel like want to share this with somebody that may be beneficial to them to listen to this conversation, I highly encourage you to do that. We've done several recordings on this particular topic. This is one of the most important one we've done recently, and I hope you guys have gotten benefit out of it. So I want to thank you everybody for listening in, for tuning in on YouTube and the audio channels, and I will see you at the next episode. Thank you, Trianne.
Thank you.
All right.